Sarvate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 6, Text 19. Nityanubhuta nijalabha nivritta trishna. Shreyasya tad vachayanai chira supta buddhi. Lokasya yakarunaya bhayam atmalokam. Akyannamo bhagavate rishabhaya tasmai. Nityanubhuta nijalabha nivritta trishna. Shreyasya tadvachanaya chira supta buddhe. Lokasya yakarunaya bhayam atmalokam. Akyannamo bhagavate rishabhaya tasmai. Nityanubhuta nijalabha nivritta trishna. Shreyasya tadvachanaya chira supta buddhe. Lokasya yakarunaya bhayam atmalokam. Akyam namo bhagavate rishabhaya tasmai. Nityanu Bhutam Salamba Nivritta Trishna. Shreyasyatad Vachanaya Chira Supta Bhude. Lokasyayat Karunaya Bhayamatma Lokam. Akyan Namo Bhagavate. Asmai Nitya Anubhuta. Due to being always conscious of his real identity. Nijalabha Nivritta Trishna. Who was complete in himself and had no other desire to fulfill. Shreyasi, in life's genuine welfare. Atat Rachanaya, by expanding activities in the material field, mistaking the body for the self. Jira, for a long time. Supta, sleeping. Bude, whose intelligence, lokasya, of men, ya, who, Lord Rishabhdev, karunaya, by his causeless mercy, abhayam, fearlessness, atmalokam, the real identity of the self, akyat, instructed, namaha, respectful obeisances. Bhagavate, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rishabhaya, unto Lord Rishabhdev. Tasmai, unto him. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Sesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Rishabhdev, was fully aware of his true identity. Therefore, he was self-sufficient, and he did not desire external gratification. There was no need for him to aspire for success, since he was complete in himself. Those who unnecessarily engage in bodily conceptions and create an atmosphere of materialism are always ignorant of their real self-interest. Out of his causeless mercy, Lord Rishabhdev taught the self's real identity and the goal of life. We therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who appeared as Lord Rishabhdev. Purport. This is the summary of this chapter, in which the activities of Lord Rishabhdev are described. Being the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, Lord Rishabhdev is complete in himself. We living entities, as parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, should follow the instructions of Lord Rishabhdev and become self-sufficient. We should not create unnecessary demands due to the bodily conception. When one is self-realized, When one is self-realized, he is sufficiently satisfied due to being situated in his original spiritual position. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 54, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatman Asochati Nakankshati. This is the goal of all living entities. Even though one may be situated within this material world, he can become fully satisfied and devoid of hankering and lamentation simply by following the instructions of the Lord as set forth in the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam. Satisfaction through self-realization is called Swarupananda. The conditioned soul, eternally sleeping in darkness, does not understand his self-interest. He simply tries to become happy by making material adjustments. But this is impossible. It is therefore said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Nate vidu svarka gatim hi vishnu. Due to gross ignorance, the conditioned soul does not know that his real self-interest is to take shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. To try to become happy by adjusting the material atmosphere is a useless endeavor. Indeed, it is impossible. By his personal behavior and instructions, Lord Rishabhdev enlightened the conditioned souls and showed him how to become self-sufficient in his spiritual identity. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fifth canto, sixth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Activities of Lord Rishabhdev. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Buddhalesha Bhati Bhaktivedanta Swaminitya Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Govardhavani Pacharane Nevashesha Sunyavadi Paschatadishatarane Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhuna Chananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasati Govarda Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So yesterday I went out on Sankirtan. And I was getting a bit of a late start, and it was Sunday, and generally Sunday, a lot of businesses are closed, so I thought I'd go to the airport. I'd been there for a while, and it's quick and easy to get to, and, you know, the program was starting early, so I wanted to get back quickly, so I thought, oh, that makes sense. So anyway, so I went to the airport, and I couldn't help but notice everybody's horrible qualities. Of course, it felt mine had something to do with my consciousness as well. But that was honestly what popped in my head. I was, you know, approaching people, and everybody, you know, not everybody, but a lot of people were, you know, very much in a rush, and they were rude and this and that. And so anyway, what immediately came to my mind was the verse in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. I couldn't remember exactly where it was at first, but then I'm distributing the Bhagavad Gita, so I had it right there with me. So I opened up and I found this verse from the 16th chapter. It goes, Dambo darpo bimanas cha krodha porusham eva cha agyanam chabi jatasya partasam padam asurim. Pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance. These qualities belong to those of demoniac nature, O son of Prita. So when I read that, I thought to myself, oh yeah, this is exactly what I'm perceiving here, you know. This is completely accurate. And then I read the purport, and I won't read the whole thing, but I towards the end of the purport, I found this one couple sentences that I found particularly interesting. It said here, these demoniac qualities are taken on by them from the very beginning of their bodies in the wombs of their mothers. And as they grow, they manifest all these inauspicious qualities. So I was going, I thought to myself when I read that, I went, yikes. I said, what is the hope? You know, it's like, here it's being explained that, you know, they're born in a body that's demoniac. It's not even that they, you know, they're born like nice people and they kind of go wrong. It's right from the get-go, they're getting a body that's demoniac. And just like, you know, if you're born in a tiger's body, what are you going to do? You're going to pounce on deer and, you know, all these kind of... It's part of the body to have these, you know, that it goes part... It's, you know, if you have a tiger's body, it's part and parcel to be ferocious and like that. So in the same way, when you take birth in one of these demoniac bodies, all these qualities come along with it. Just like when you buy a certain kind of car that, you know, has a package of equipment, you know. So this is the package of equipment that you get when you take birth as a human being, but in a demoniac body. Pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, ignorance. These are not the qualities that are conducive, as mentioned, actually just by Krishna in the very next verse. These are not qualities that are conducive towards liberation, but they make for bondage. He says the transcendental qualities are conducive to liberation, whereas the demoniac qualities make for bondage. So these are qualities that make for bondage. And this is what 99.9% of the human population is dealing with. Now you might say, no, that's an exaggeration. No, it's not. It's not an exaggeration. And I'll make a statement here from another purport Prabhupada gives to substantiate my conviction that that's not an exaggeration. It says here in the two verses up in the purport to the sixth text of the same chapter, Prabhupada says, one who does not follow the regulative principles as they are laid down in the scriptures, and who acts according to his whims, is called demoniac or asuric. There is no other criterion but obedience to the regulative principles of scriptures. There is no other criterion but obedience to the regulative principles of scriptures. And then he emphasizes, he says, it is mentioned in the Vedic literature that both the demigods and the demons are born of the Prajapati. The only difference is that one class obeys the Vedic injunctions and the other does not. So the point is, when you see people not following the regulative principles of the Vedic, you know, scriptures, the Vedic literature, that means they're demonic because there's no other criterion. And then we can understand from that that, you know, they have those qualities. You see? So how many people are following the regulative principles of the Vedic literatures? Practically nobody. So we can understand from that that practically means practically everybody is demoniac. And this is what, you know, this is the hand of cards that they're being dealt. They got to, you know, live with that, okay? And, you know, they have the qualities that are conducive to bondage. So what is the hope? You know, what is the hope for these people, right? Well, practically nothing. I say practically nothing, or it seemed nothing, because it's got to be something. Means if I were to just out and out say there is no hope, then, well, aside from being pretty depressing, it would be contradictory to other things that we hear in the scriptures. Like, for instance, just yesterday we heard Prabhupada say, he quoted from the Bhagavad Gita, "Mam hi partha payapasvritya, ye pisuya papayonaya, striya vaishas tatha sudras, te piyanti param gatim." That even women, vaishas, and sudras, and lower, can achieve the supreme destination if they fully take shelter of me. See, so, in other words, there has got to be some hope, and this is how I see it, that being born in a human body with demoniac qualities, there is a difference between that and being born in a tiger's body or a dog's body or a cat's body. And that when you're born in an animal's body, you are completely governed by your instinctual drives. The animals have negligible free will. I mean, if any, they don't have free will. I mean, the animals are just completely governed by their instinctual drives. But a human being who's born in a demoniac family with, you know, demoniac qualities, those qualities are, excuse me, my voice is not cooperating here. Those qualities are not absolute forces, but rather powerful influences. See? So an absolute force obviously cannot be overcome, but whereas a powerful influence can be. You see? So they're starting at a great disadvantage. That much we can safely say. They're definitely starting at, us too, you know. We're started at a great disadvantage. So that's one point. And another point is, which brings us, you know, dealing with this issue of where's the hope, is that the real hope lies in Kiratu Hunanda Pulinda Pukasa Abira Sumba Yavana Kasadaya Ye Necha Papa Yadapashrayashraya Shujanti Tasmai Pabavishnave Namaha. That's the real hope. The real hope is that they will come in contact with the pure devotee of the Lord, and by the mercy of the pure devotee of the Lord, they will get the opportunity to be engaged in devotional service. That's the real hope. That's the only real hope, you know, for the demoniac people and the human form of life. You know, that they just can manage to just do a little something, you know, properly use their free will a little bit. Because see, the thing, Krishna's within the heart. Okay, and he's aware, Prabhupada says in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, that Krishna is aware of the psychic movements of every living entity. So this is my understanding of how the whole thing works, okay? That, at least in some cases, that Krishna's right there in the heart, okay? And when human beings, even despite, you know, who are born with demoniac qualities, but when they, you know, make that little bit of an effort, they do something to try to be a, you know, a better person, a good person or something, a turn towards God in some way. Krishna's aware of that in the heart, you know, and then he gives them a further opportunity, you know, maybe that's the little bit of qualification they need, you know, and then they, you know, Krishna makes an arrangement for them to come in contact with the devotional service. Or possibly they do nothing and it's just total causeless mercy. They just, you know, they just happen to come in contact with a pure devotee and it's just total causeless mercy of Krishna that they're having the opportunity to have that association. And then it's a total causeless mercy of the devotee that he, you know, tries to, you know, attract them or, you know, persuade them to engage in devotional service. So really, so the, you know, the role of the devotee is so important for the deliverance of the human society, deliverance of mankind, especially today when you consider where they're starting. Is there any pool players here, just out of curiosity? You know that game? Any pool players? No? Okay. I was a pool player. Archduke was a pool player, Ganesh. Yeah. So you remember that game, 8-ball? Yeah. So there's an expression, you know, starting behind the 8-ball. And for those of you who are pool players, you know what that means. And for those of you who aren't, I'll try to explain it. There's a game called 8-ball when you play pool. And the rules of that game are that if the cue ball hits the 8-ball before it hits any other ball, you lose a turn. You know, you... Okay, and if by accident, if you hit the 8-ball, if you pocket the 8-ball, you know, if you actually put it in the hole, put it in the little pouch there, then you automatically lose the game. So the expression starting behind the 8-ball means you're starting at a great disadvantage. Because, like, if your ball, if the cue ball is right behind the 8-ball, it's going to be hard for you. You know, the best you could do, and also if you hit the cue ball and it doesn't hit any other ball, that's called scratch, and you lose a turn for that, too. You see? So when you're behind the 8-ball there, you got to, what do? You know, you can't hit the 8-ball. If you hit the 8-ball, you lose a turn. And if you try to just kind of like get, you know, just cue them, it's going to be hard for you to even shoot it to hit another ball, to get the cue ball to hit another ball. What to speak of hit another ball, call your shot and get the ball in the pocket. See, so it's, you're starting behind the 8-ball. It's a very practical expression. It means you're starting at a great disadvantage. So, once again, you know, these people, the vast majority of people in human society today, they're starting at a great disadvantage, like starting behind the 8-ball, you know. So, once again, the role of the devotee is very important because it's really only by the mercy of the devotees that people are going to have the, you know, opportunity to take advantage of this what's supposed to be the boon of the human form of life. And once again, to just confirm this point, we'll read something. I think I've probably quoted the same passage in every class I've given, probably the last six classes, but it's great. We repeat a lot of things in Krishna consciousness, by the way, so I don't feel guilty doing this. I mean, every morning we recite a lot of different things, you know, 10 offenses, et cetera, et cetera. This is important. This could be recited every day, too. At least I'll recite it probably every time I give class. This is an excerpt from a purport in the fourth canto, chapter 29, text 46. Mataji was asking me for this for about the last month, and I kept forgetting to tell her. So, Prabhupada says, a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always thinking how fallen conditioned souls can be delivered. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, influenced by the merciful devotee's attempt to deliver fallen souls, enlightens the people in general from within by his causeless mercy. So that's how it works. You know, Prabhupada's clearly saying here, that's how it works. See? That, you know, the pure devotee, he's always thinking about how to deliver the fallen souls. And Krishna, being influenced by the pure devotee's attempt to deliver the fallen souls, you know, he reciprocates. And that reciprocation takes the form of Tesham eva anukamparatam mahamma jnana jam tamaha nasyami atmabhavashto jnana dipena bhashvata. Krishna says, I am who am dwelling within their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. And here's just another way of saying it. Krishna, he, you know, influenced by the merciful devotee's attempt to deliver the fallen souls, enlightens the people in general from within by his causeless mercy. You know, to a certain degree, he destroys with that shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance, at least enough so that they can be attracted to engage in devotional service, get a book, whatever. You see? So, somebody might say, well, yeah, of course, well, that's referring to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, of course, without intending to, of course, was writing about himself. But the thing is, it shouldn't end there. You see, in other words, it's not like, you know, we should be thinking that, oh, well, you know, that was Prabhupada, but that's not us. You know, I mean, that's actually, if you think like that, you know, that's kind of like, that's along the lines of how the Ritviks think. You know, that's actually taking away from the glory of Prabhupada. We refer to Prabhupada as an acharya, okay, means teacher by example. So certainly Prabhupada did teach by example. And certainly he taught. But if none of the followers, I mean, you know, what does that say about a teacher if none of the people he's teaching? You're saying, this so-and-so is such a great teacher of the sitar, but all his students was useless, you know? What is it? It's like, it doesn't really, it's taking away from the glory of that teacher. You're saying, oh, so-and-so is such a great teacher of this and that, but none of his students were worth anything. No, he should have, if somebody's a great, great teacher or something, that means he should have some students who are also accomplished like that. So, I mean, that's what the Rithviks say, by the way. You know, they have that same sort of logic, right? That, oh, you know, nobody could be like Prabhupada. But that's actually taking away from Prabhupada. That's to say that Prabhupada was such a great spiritual master, but he couldn't produce any disciples who were, you know, capable of doing what he wanted, which was following in the tradition, the Vaishnav tradition, and becoming spiritual masters in their own right, and, you know, like that. So I think it's an incorrect understanding is what I'm leading around to. No, we can. But it's like, I think I made this point in a previous class, just like, you know, we have sadhana bhakti, you know, we practice certain things. There's sadhana sankirtan. You know, we have to practice that. We have to desire that and try to cultivate that quality. And if we do, we should be able to. You know? And I know the other morning, and we should want to do that. We should want to do that. We should, you know, that was Prabhupada's desire. That was Lord Chaitanya's desire. Yare deke tari kaha krishna upadesh, amana gaya guduhana tari desha. Wherever you go, whoever you meet, you know, instruct them about the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, become a spiritual master and deliver all the people on this land. So it was the desire of Lord Chaitanya, is the desire of the parampara, the disciplic succession, and our spiritual master, that we all become gurus, you know. Yeah, that's what that verse says, right? So, you know, we should be wanting that. The other morning, I don't know if anybody else caught this, but I caught it. Suvas was, he was talking, you know, when he makes his morning announcements, and it was the morning when we were going to, it was the first morning of the Rukmini Dwarkanath festival. So he read a purport from this, I think it was from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it was describing how in the Kali Yuga, you know, that used to be, in Satya Yuga, everybody used to be a Paramahamsa, and then the next Yuga, they were doing jagyas, and then it made the point about how at some point the dealings between the Vaishnavs and the Brahmins and the people broke down, and there was disrespect, you know, among them. So then deity worship was introduced. So he read that book. And then he made the point at the end. He said, so anyway, you know, we should understand we're all Kanishtadikaris, and so we should take this all, you know, this thing seriously. And, of course, I think what he was trying to say was, you know, we should understand how important that deity worship is, a very important part of our lives, and we should therefore, you know, take this seriously. This is a great opportunity to, you know, to act upon something which is a very important part of life. But I remember when he said that thing about, well, you know, we should understand, therefore we're all Kanishtadikars. I thought, my immediate response was, hey, wait a second, buddy. Where I come from, them's fighting words, you know? I mean, you know, we don't want to be called Kanishta. I mean, I just spent 36 years trying to distribute books every day. And as I said, I don't think he really meant to insult anybody by, you know, telling us we're all a bunch of Kanishtadikars, but, you know, the idea is we shouldn't be satisfied to remain Kanishtadikaris, right? And even if he did say that, I'm sure he was just trying to jab us and, you know, trying to get us to say, hey, well, you know, come on, get up, everybody. Actually, that was one of the things that I think Prabhupada mentioned that about his spiritual master, that he was very dissatisfied, you know, that he saw like none of his disciples were coming up as, you know, good preachers. He wanted that, you know, and Prabhupada wanted that too. That's why he produced all these books and gave us so many purports with all the different arguments and so forth, and, you know, the philosophy presented from so many different angles of vision, and he slices and dices all the issues in so many different ways. It's, you know, it's there for our training. So anyway, we should desire to move on. Of course, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. To be a Kanishtadikari is glorious. You know, I mean, to be any kind of Adhikari is glorious. I mean, and of course, and the devotee's humble, so he doesn't think that, oh, how dare you call me a Kanishtadikari? I mean, a devotee should be feeling like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. He was feeling lower than the worm in the stool. And one class Satchitananda Prabhu gave, he even embellished upon that. He said, one can feel lower than the stool and the worm, which is even lower. You know, so what? Remember? So anyway, So we should be feeling humble, and we shouldn't take offense at, you know, being referred to maybe as Kanishtadikaris. But the point is, we should want to move, progress from there to become Majjhimadikaris. That was, you know, obviously that's the program. And as I said, even if we don't, you know, feel like we're there or that we it's beyond us, one thing that we can do, you know, is we can pray to Krishna. You know, we can pray to Krishna for help. Actually, if you stop and analyze it, it should work. Praying to Krishna should work, and I'll tell you why. Because one, you know, we believe that Krishna is, you know, within the heart, and he's aware of everything. He's, you know, as I mentioned before, Prabhupada says he, as a super soul, he's aware of the psychic movements of every living entity. And two, he's the supreme controller. He's completely in control. Ultimately, Krishna's in control of everything that happens in both the material and the spiritual worlds. And three, he is the Suridam, Sarvabhutanam. He's the best friend of every living entity. And even beyond that, he's Bhaktivatsal. So when somebody becomes, he's the best friend of every living entity, he's the best well-wish of every living entity. Even beyond that, when somebody becomes his devotee, he's particularly, he has special affection and inclination towards his devotees. So just, at least on paper, it makes sense. You know, theory, it should work. If somebody's a sincere devotee and they pray to Krishna, please help me progress. Please help me become a progress from a Kanishtadikari to a Majjhimadikari. And they're sincere about, you know, doing what needs to be done to do that, then why wouldn't Krishna reciprocate? You know, why won't Krishna fulfill that desire, fulfill that prayer? You know, should. Certainly that's our philosophy, that it should work that way. And another point is that to be a preacher doesn't necessarily mean you have to go out and distribute books. That's nice, of course, you know. It doesn't even mean you have to, you know, give lectures or anything like that. It could start, there's an expression, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. So here's a single step. Here's a single step suggestion that when people come to the temple, you know, say you're like here, your service is something to do with the restaurant or the deities or whatever, and you're basically here in the community the vast majority of your time. So when people come to the temple, just, you know, greet them. Hi, how's it going? You know, how you doing? And just be friendly. What's your name? What do you do? Where are you from? You know. And then you could, if you feel so inclined, you can give them a little bit of philosophy. But even if you don't, if you could just see that they're friendly and they're receptive and like that, you just ask them, hey, would you like to do some service? That's a good thing to, you know, have as like a regular thing that you know, everybody you talk to, especially if they're a new kind of person, ask them, would you like to do some service? And if they say yes, and if you can't think of anything, then just find, you know, Bhagavad Kripa or Mother Pavaka, they'll come up with something, or any of the temple authorities like that, leaders. If you can't figure out how to engage them, then just, you know, pass them on to another devotee, and they'll figure out how to engage. That's preaching. Because preaching means engaging people in devotional service. It doesn't necessarily mean, you know, Prabhupada once said to a devotee, they were having some program, and they forgot to take make a book table. But then the devotee, when, you know, Prabhupada asked about them, but said, no, but Prabhupada, but we gave a very good lecture. And Prabhupada said, what is the use of your 3 minutes preaching? If they read one line of my book, their entire life will be changed. So in other words, preaching isn't always just speaking, you know. Preaching takes different forms. Preaching ultimately means engaging people in devotional service. So that's a good program. That's a good program, and actually, to be honest with you, that ultimately, that's our only program. There's another expression. I'm fond of, you know, like expressions like that. Can't see the forest for the trees. Everybody's heard that one? You can't see the forest for the trees? Come on, you must have heard that one. Everybody's heard that one? Yeah, okay. Yeah, of course, right, okay. We wake out there? Yeah. So what does that mean? That means that you're so close, you know, you're already in the forest, and you're kind of like in the middle of all the trees, and you're so kind of like, you're so absorbed, and everything's so, you know, you're so covered by all the trees that you forget, that you lose sight of the fact that you're in this beautiful forest, you see, because you're kind of like tangled up with all the trees once within the forest. So it's the same sort of thing. We have to be careful not to interact with the International Society of Krishna Consciousness in such a way that we forget our very purpose in being here. Our very purpose in being here is to get the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And second part of that purpose is to give that mercy to other people. That's the purpose of being, you know, a member of the Krishna International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And if we lose sight of that, then we are in danger of, you know, not being able to see the forest for the trees. We're losing sight of the real purpose of, you know, being devotees. So I'm starting to get kind of like indications here that I'm at the time limit. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any? Yeah, I got my book. Thank you. Time flies when you're having fun. I had a lot more. No, not really. Anyway, that's pretty much what I had to say. So,
thank you very much, Prabhu, for your nice class. Just a comment about your last point, how devotees in the community should be more welcoming. I was talking to one person the other day, and they were commenting how they'd been coming here for some 2 years before they were even told that the temple here had a museum, for instance, or that there was even a garden, Srila Prabhupada's garden. And then they went on to continue by saying that often they would come, and there were some particular devotees in the community that would walk around with just terrible cold frowns on their faces, not very welcoming. The whole gist of the conversation we had was how the first impression is a very lasting impression. And if the devotees aren't welcoming and friendly, when a person comes into the community, what are they going to be thinking? Well, they don't have anything valuable. So it's really important that devotees themselves have to become Krishna conscious and happy in Krishna consciousness, and be able to share that with people when they walk in. Otherwise, what are we doing here?
Yeah, thank you. Great comment. Archdeep.
Hare Krishna. Very nice point you're both making. But it's like everything else, charity begins at home. So like Prabhupada said, you know, that time when he was in the airport and there was a big mahatrayan and the devotee was walking out to go and feed the non-devotees. And he said, where are you going? He said, well, I just wanted to serve prasadam. He said, no, first of all, feed the devotees. So if you can't be friendly with the devotees, then how are you going to be friendly with those who come in from outside? So you start at home, literally. If you can't be friendly with yourself, how are you going to be friendly with the next person? And if you can't be friendly with the very next person next to you, then how are you going to extend that to the rest of the devotees in the community, etc.? So you have to start right here with everything. Our preaching, our friendliness, everything has to start right here. I remember when I joined on Henry Street, that's one of the reasons why I got sucked in so quickly. You know, you were there. You came through the door and they all pounced on you. Jadarani, Jayadweta, Pushkar, all the older devotees, they pounced on you. Who are you? How did you get here? What brought you here? Everybody wanted to know your story. You felt immediately like you were the center of attention, which is how we want to feel in the material world anyway. And once they got to know you a little bit, oh, you're a college student, you're a little bit intelligent. Okay, now you better start reading this, read that. What do you think of this? They pounced on you, literally. So, but we don't have that feeling here in New York. Somebody comes and everybody just zooms by them, and you know, maybe 2 years later you find out why that person came here and how they... No, you have to be interested. And that interest begins with yourself. If you're not really interested in your own life and where you're going and what you're doing, then for sure you're not going to be interested genuinely in anybody else. So everybody needs to look at themselves first, and it needs to start top down. The senior devotees have to always set the mood. In Henry Street, that's how it was. Jayadweta and Tamal Krishna, when he was there, and all the senior devotees, that was their mood. They wanted to know who was there and why and how, and they were plugged into everything. And therefore, that mood spread down to the newer devotees. We picked it up right away, as soon as we came in. You know, the way they greeted me was this. I came through the door the very first day, I'll always remember. Nobody was available to speak to me right away, so they parked me in that room with all the artwork. And they said, just wait here for a few minutes. And immediately your mind was blown because he started seeing, you know, Mahavishnu lying on the causal ocean, all that fire. So he started to, you know, generate questions. So when somebody finally came, you had questions. What is this and why that? And like that. So, you know, there has to be some kind of formal greeting process. If a new person comes and you don't have time, direct them to the visitor center, to the, you know, and then Mother Pavaka should have a routine. There always has to be a routine. Otherwise, things fall through the cracks.
Yeah, thank you. That's a great comment. Anybody else like to add anything? Okay.
It's very loud. Thank you, Prabhupada, for your great service.
Guys, speak louder.
Thank you so much for your great service. And I would like to ask you, how are you doing this so many years? What is your motivation every day to see that faces?
No, I'm just totally useless for all other purposes. So, as a matter of, it's like default, you know. Okay, I'm just doing what I can do. So everybody does their thing, and that's what I'm doing. Oh, she asked, how am I doing book distribution for so many years? And I said, I'm totally useless for all other purposes. And that's how I'm doing what I can do, and everybody has their contribution, and that's the way I'm attempting to contribute to this, you know, my spiritual master's movement. I don't think it's any special thing. Okay, we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Guntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.